February 4th, 1999. A 23-year-old man is standing outside of his apartment building in the South Bronx. He's just gotten home from a long day of work. He works as a street vendor in Manhattan, selling cassette tapes and other items on 14th Street. He works 10 to 12 hours a day, sometimes 6 days a week. He's trying to save enough money to go to college. His name is Amadou Diallo. He moved to New York 2.5 years earlier from Guinea, in search of the American dream.
As he's standing in the entryway to his building, an unmarked police car pulls up. They're patrolling the neighborhood, looking for crime. Four white police officers in plain clothes get out. They see Amadou reach for something and think he's got a gun. The four officers fire 41 shots. 19 bullets hit Amadou, killing him. But he had no gun. What he'd been reaching for was just his wallet. The four officers are charged with reckless endangerment and second-degree murder. A year later, a jury made up of 8 white and 4 black jurors acquitted the officers of all charges.
The Bronx is enraged. America is grieving. And the streets are protesting.
How many shots?
41.
Whose street?
Our street.
When do you want it?
Now.
When do you want it?
Now.
How do you want it?
Joining the protest is a group of street artists and activists.
100 blacks in law enforcement say cooling down the rhetoric on some of the signs used by protesters at the rallies and demonstrations would go a long way toward easing the tensions between police and the citizens they serve.
They protest the best way they know, with art.
Street artist Robert Lederman says he's exercising his First Amendment right when he paints Mayor Giuliani as Hitler. But 100 blacks in law enforcement say these negative signs and others like them are inflammatory. The group is asking.
Eventually, the protests quiet down. But the Bronx is still searching for a way to remember Amadou and to grieve him. And so they turn to art. A mural goes up in the neighborhood where Amadou lived and was killed. But rather than memorializing him, the mural becomes its own form of protest. It's so shocking that the police are called. It gets defaced in the middle of the night. And eventually, it gets painted over and replaced with a new mural. And so we wanted to know why. Why was the mural changed?
This is Shoe Leather, an investigative podcast that digs up stories from New York City's past to find out how yesterday's news affect us today.
This season, we're going back to 1999 to tell the story of Amadou Diallo, an unarmed black man who was killed by 4 white police officers. They fired 41 shots.
This is The Mural. In this episode, we're turning to Soundview, a neighborhood in the South Bronx, and how a single mural wall became the epicenter for grief, anger, and healing.
I'm Sarah Braun.
I'm Dani Morera Tretin. This is True Leather. In the South Bronx sits the intersection of Willer and Westchester Avenue. Willer is short, just 4 blocks, mostly 2-story apartment buildings. Westchester couldn't be any more different. It's a major artery through the Bronx, east to west. It's lined with boutiques, pharmacies, bodegas, and what seems like restaurants of all the world's cuisines. The avenues meet at Amadou Diallo Place. The block was renamed after Amadou's killing, to honor the place where he lived, and ultimately, where he died. Close to the intersection, I see a sign that reads Diallo Fashion. No relation to Amadou, just an awfully common last name for West Africans. Metal pillars line the pavement supporting the subway platform, suspended above the street. It's a terrible place to record clean audio.
I'm on the side of the bodega, standing in front of Amadou's mural, and I have to stop recording every couple minutes. This is like my 4th take because of the train. Right next door, there's a Mexican restaurant, and then the corner, there's the gourmet deli. And then across the street, there's a food truck, a taqueria, then a barber shop, and a smoke shop.
The neighborhood has changed since Amadou's mural was painted here in 2001. Back then, there was a hair salon, not a Mexican restaurant. And instead of a deli, there was a botanica. It sold religious artifacts, charms, talismans, mementos, and flowers. The owner was a man named Jovino, or Mr. B, as people in the neighborhood called him. And it's on the outside wall of Mr. B's botanica where Amadou's mural was painted. Mr. B died in 2004. We tried contacting his son, but couldn't get a hold of him. So what we know about the mural and how it came to be is from the man who painted it. His name is Hulbert Waldrop. Back in 2001, Hulbert was living in Harlem. He was 33 years old. And he was working as an artist, doing mostly jazz paintings and film portraits. And on a morning in March, he decided to make his way out to the Bronx, to the street where Amadou was killed, to pay his respects.
Although I'm kind of a news junkie, I'd like to have my boots on the ground.
Hulbert had been reading the news that morning. It had been 2 years since Amadou's killing, and it was still in the news cycle.
I remember, like, trying to find my way to the Soundview section of the Bronx. I had never been there.
And it's on that trip that he met Mr. B.
I walked into his store and, you know, I bought a few things, of course, and we struck up a conversation about the shooting, and I told him I'm an artist and I just wanted to come here and see, and he asked if I wanted to do a mural on the side of his building.
Hulbert, like Amadou, is black. Growing up in Chicago, he always felt like people of color were treated unfairly by police.
Everybody in the neighborhood was like, wow, that could have been me. Mm-hmm. Every mother, every father, they're like, whoa, that could have been me. That could have been my son. You know what I mean? So
that was on his mind as he was deciding whether or not to paint the mural.
You know, when he asked me to do the mural, I don't think I said yes right away. I think I just thought about it a day or talked to some friends and came back a day or two later and say, yeah, I'd be honored to paint a mural here on the side of the building.
That decision and the mural he painted on the corner of Wheeler and Westchester Avenue was about to transform the dynamics of the neighborhood.
Hulbert gets to work on the mural in April of 2001. And he does so behind a giant drop cloth, keeping the mural hidden. We asked him what he remembered about working on Wheeler Avenue.
Everyone was supportive. People were curious. Hey, what are you doing? What are you working on? You know, people would chime in and say, oh, you need to do this. You need to include that. You know what I mean?
After working on the mural for 2 weeks, Hulbert is ready to show the world what he's been up to. The date is set. April 25th, 2001.
It came time for my unveiling, and I told the people in the neighborhood. I'll never forget this. They came out.
April 25th is a warm spring day, already 80 degrees by noon. Dozens of people are gathered outside of the Botanica.
The people in the neighborhood, they felt that the community, it was a great injustice done to the whole community. And they came out.
Hulbert pulls down the drop cloth, unveiling the mural. It covers the entire wall, 20 feet tall and 35 feet wide. At the top, the title, The American Dream. Red, white, and blue letters on an American flag that is in flames. Below are four police officers, each one holding up a gun. Their faces are covered by Ku Klux Klan hoods.
To the side stands the Statue of Liberty. Her face is a skeleton. Instead of a torch in her hand, it's a gun.
And there, right in the center, is Amadou. He wears a red t-shirt. He isn't smiling, his big eyes staring out onto the street.
Someone who happens to be driving by, just as Hulbert unveils the mural, is Surgeon Franklin Sorensen. According to a New York Times article, he sees the officers painted in KKK hoods. he jumps out of his patrol car and finds the closest phone, calling for backup.
People were clapping, and within 2 minutes, here's two squad cars, and more squad cars, and more squad cars. And police start to question me. Who did this? You're going to jail. Do you have permission? Even if you have permission, you have to take this down, remove this. We don't like this. This, but you're causing trouble in this neighborhood. This. I remember being scared shitless.
Hobart says that the crowd starts getting in between him and the police, and that things get so intense that the local assembly member, a guy named Ruben Diaz, has to get involved to help mediate. And so we wanted to talk with Assemblyman Diaz ourselves to hear his perspective on what happened.
Hello, can you hear us?
I can hear you loud and clear.
So we call him up and ask him about that day.
What happened is that the landlord of the property initially gave Holbert permission to paint the mural. He started backtracking once he saw what the mural was and all the attention it was getting. So initially he said yes, not knowing what the mural was going to entail. But then when he saw that the mural was up and he saw that the police were upset and he saw that the cameras were around, he started to get nervous about it.
Diaz says Mr. B sort of panicked when the cops showed up asking questions about the mural.
And so when the cops were approaching the landlord was not clear as to whether or not he gave Holbert the permission. And so therefore they started then being belligerent to Holbert.
Mr. B didn't tell the cops right away that he had asked Holbert to paint the mural. But eventually he owned up to it. And so the standoff between the police and the crowd ended.
But we wanted to understand, was it just the police who were upset with the mural? How did this community, the same community where Amadou lived, feel about it? So we went searching for some firsthand accounts of what people thought back in 2001. We combed through articles that came out at the time.
One quotes a 47-year-old man from Soundview who said, quote, "The irony of it is that Diallo came for the American dream, and it turned out to be a nightmare." So he thought that the mural did a good job representing the United States.
We found another article that quoted Holbert at the time. He said he had gotten, quote, "nothing but praise and thanks from neighborhood residents who have seen his mural." A woman even tells Holbert that she wished she owned a building of her own so that she could commission him to put up a similar mural. But one person who definitely did not love it was Mr. B. He said to the Daily News Express that he never asked Holbert to, quote, "do those kinds of things." He acknowledged that the community loved it, but to him, it was too much.
How did you feel like, you know, you're working on this as an artist, and then the person who commissions it tells you, like, not really my thing?
Sure, he wanted a picture of Amadou Diallo on the side, you know, but I told the full story. So, yeah, I mean, any business owner doesn't want, you know, unwanted attention, you know what I mean? Try to stay low key.
And it turns out Mr. B wasn't the only one who felt this way. Someone else wanted to make it clear that they didn't agree with the mural's message. But they decided to use a paintbrush instead of words.
2 days after the unveiling, Holbert gets a phone call from a guy who works in Assemblyman Diaz's office.
And he said, you know, your mural, it's been defaced in the middle of the night.
A young man walked up to the mural with a bucket of black paint in his hand. He pulled out a paintbrush and covered the section of the mural that featured the four police officers in KKK hoods. Someone later says he saw the whole thing happen. His name is Hernando Reyes, and he's a reporter for a local Spanish language radio station. He says, quote, "I've never seen someone painting so fast." Reyes also claims that Mr. B watched the man as he painted over the police officers, and that he didn't do anything to stop him.
We tried reaching out to Reyes. In 2016, he started campaigning to become the next president of Colombia, from Queens, New York. He never responded to our request.
Mr. B denies being involved in the defacing. However, he does acknowledge to Newsday being, quote, under tremendous conflicting pressures from police friends and community residents about the artwork. To this day, no one knows who defaced the mural. Here's Diaz again.
We would always believe it was some outsider, meaning outside the community, who was pro-police.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was what was out there. So nobody was able to prove who did what.
Diaz asks Hulbert to fix the mural and offers to pay for the supplies, so that next day, Hulbert gets to work. And as he does so, he meets Katia Tudialo, Amadou's mother. She'd been leading protests alongside the Reverend Al Sharpton.
Al Sharpton said the mother would like to meet me and thank me, and she was a very beautiful, graceful woman.
Do you remember how that interaction was like or anything that she said?
She said, that doesn't look like my boy. You know, and I was like, I did the best I could do with the pictures that I had. I'm sorry. But, you know, that was a little chuckle. And she said, my son was more handsome.
But Hulbert's goal was to focus on the cops.
Now, I wanted to humiliate the cops. And I thought the best way to humiliate them was to put them in Klan hoods. And so that's what I did. I wanted to give them really the scarlet letter.
The mural wasn't the first time that a piece of art in New York caused an uproar, especially work created by Black artists. There was a major blow-up in October of 1999. The same year Amadou was killed, and 2 years before Hulbert's mural.
New York City and the Brooklyn Museum of Art remain at loggerheads over a controversial show scheduled to open Saturday.
A new exhibit was opening at the Brooklyn Museum. It was called the Sensation Exhibit. Its creators wanted to stir the viewers, to cause a sensation. The pieces range from portraits painted with human blood and decapitated animals to sexually explicit images. But the most controversial is a painting of the Virgin Mary decorated with elephant dung. Plastered about are images of women cut from pornographic magazines. It's painted by Black artist Chris O'Filly.
I'm not going to negotiate about something like this.
The painting causes so much outrage that then-mayor Rudy Giuliani acts. He speaks out against the exhibition and starts trying to defund the museum.
I think this show is disgusting. I think it's a disgusting show. I think that it's a terrible, terrible use of government funds. And I think that's the issue.
And he succeeds. Giuliani is able to convince the city council to slash the Brooklyn Museum's funding by $7.2 million, a third of its annual budget. The museum also gets funding from the federal government, and members of Congress join in the outrage.
Speaker, it's not just about the Virgin Mary splattered with cow manure. It's about common decency.
The House of Representatives passes legislation to suspend the museum's federal funding with ample bipartisan support.
This isn't freedom of expression. This is stone-cold promotion of garbage. Congress should be supporting Mayor Giuliani's attempt to stop public funding of this type of trash.
The art world responds with their own outrage. To many, it's government censorship. Politicians and advocacy organizations speak out in defense of the museum.
The First Lady, stopping in Harlem to push for more federal funding for education, says the mayor is going too far.
Our feelings of being offended should not lead to the penalizing and shutting down of an entire museum.
Even Carrie Bradshaw takes a crack at the debate in an episode of Sex and the City from 2000.
Yep, that's the woman.
Look at that bulge. It's shocking.
Yeah, I know. Hurry up and look before Giuliani shuts it down. So?
During all the back and forth, the museum is able to stay open, and the painting stays up. But it doesn't take long for the painting to be defaced. 2 months after the opening of the exhibition, a 72-year-old white man, smears paint on top of the art piece. He's later arrested.
The museum reacts with a vibrant yellow cigarette warning style sign. May cause shock, vomiting, confusion, panic, euphoria, and anxiety.
It all comes to a head in a legal fight. Giuliani versus the Brooklyn Museum. And the Brooklyn Museum wins. A federal judge rules the funding freeze unconstitutional, that it violates the museum's First Amendment rights. So not only does the funding start up again, but the city council is also ordered to pay $5.8 million in repairs to the museum.
But the Brooklyn Museum isn't done with provocative art. And neither are black artists.
The year before last, the Brooklyn Museum and Catholic groups tangled over a painting decorated with lacquered elephant dung and dubbed the Holy Virgin Mary. Now it's Yo Mama's Last Supper, a photograph featuring the artist herself naked as Jesus.
Renee Cox, the artist who made the photograph, is seen standing in the middle, naked, with open arms. On her sides, black men posing as the 12 disciples. It's the scene of the Last Supper.
Bill Donahue of the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights is furious.
If you want to have a black person as Christ, that's okay. You want to have a black female as Christ, that's okay. Full frontal nudity, it's just gone a little bit too far. The reaction
of Giuliani is enraged. Again. Here he's talking to a group of reporters.
This photograph is intended to attack the Catholic religion. The person who did the photograph almost says as much. It is clearly obscene, and your newspaper won't show it.
After losing the last battle in the courts, the city comes up with a new way to target art. It creates something known as the Decency Commission.
The commission's goal is to judge the decency of art. It then makes a recommendation to the city council whether or not they should fund the project. The board doesn't include a single artist.
But notably, it does include Giuliani's own divorce lawyer, Raul Felder.
As a veteran divorce lawyer, Raul Felder has gotten his share of nasty phone calls, but he says he's never fielded anything like the barrage that came in after he agreed to serve on Mayor Rudolph Giuliani's so-called Decency Commission. He's afraid that that attitude will poison the conversation about whether government should support institutions showing art that could offend taxpayers.
What we should have here is a debate. And maybe it can wisdom, maybe nothing, maybe light, maybe heat. But it's a fair subject for debate. There's great questions involved here.
Many observers say the commission's just an outlet to let Giuliani blow off steam about his anger over anti-Catholic art at the Brooklyn Museum. Felder says no, it's a serious panel, but he adds it may end up recommending no change in the way the city supports the arts. Warren Levinson.
The commission issues a negative recommendation on Yo Mama's Last Supper, meaning that the city shouldn't fund its exhibition with taxpayer dollars. But a decision is not binding, and the photograph is allowed to run its course.
It was just 2 months after Yo Mama's Last Supper that Hulbert unveils his mural for Amadou, American Dream. Many expect the Decency Commission to target the mural for its depiction of the white officers in Klan hoods. After all, the commission was created to battle so-called offensive art.
Journalists ask for comment, but the commission remains quiet.
And two major events are about to happen in New York City that will change the conversation around art.
So you have no idea right now?
Oh, there's another one. Another plane just hit. Right? Oh, my God. Another plane has just hit. It hit another building. Flew right into the middle of it. Explosion. My God, it's right in the middle of the building.
9/11 happens. And the city no longer has the time or resources to investigate art. And on top of that, Giuliani's time as mayor is about to end. Shortly after 9/11, there's an election for a new mayor. One of the candidates is Michael Bloomberg. He campaigns on defending the arts of New York City. As a board member of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, his stake is clear. City mayors should support the arts, not defund them. In November of 2001, he wins. And one of his first acts as mayor is to dismantle the Decency Commission. And so Hulbert's mural seems to be safe, for now.
After the unveiling of the mural, the dust sort of settles. And over the next few years, it becomes a major attraction in the Bronx. People come from all over the world to see the mural and its depiction of the, quote, real New York. Tour guides actually lead tours to see it. One guide explains to the New York Daily News that tourists come to Wheeler Avenue because it's, quote, gritty and tells a story. Another guide says, quote, Amadou Diallo is like the Disneyland of the Bronx. He said that no tour would be complete without it.
We asked Ruben Diaz, the assembly member, what he thought of the influx of tourists. He wanted to serve as the Bronx Borough President from 2009 to 2021.
There were so many people who after the Diallo killing, they came to New York, and if they were going to find their way to the Bronx, they read and saw or were affected in some way, shape, or form by the Diallo killing.
While some members of the community welcomed the influx of visitors, others were not so happy about it.
I'm sure that there were people who, after a while, were like, that's it. We don't want all of these people to clog up our block or park in our streets, or these giant buses, you know, with folks who from foreign lands coming in and taking pictures of us, like if we're some type of zoo.
But over the years, the mural began to deteriorate. The tourist buses stopped coming. Like the mural itself, interest in Amadou's story was fading.
Fast forward to 2017, a cold winter morning. A local artist walks past the mural to get to her appointment at the nearby hair salon. Her name is Hawa Diallo. No relation to Amadou.
Uh-huh. I used to come and wash my hair. Uh-huh. And the lady was like, she know me. Then she was like, oh, Miss Hawa, you do art, right? I say, yes, I do. I'm trying. Then
she was like, Hawa tells us the story as we sit down together at a West African restaurant in the Bronx, a couple of blocks away from the mural.
Then she was like, and Amadou Diallo mural is failing. Tourists are not coming anymore. This is not nice. You guys should renew it.
Hawa tells the hairdresser that she'll think about it. Her daughter, Zanabu, goes to get her hair done at the same spot shortly after. The hairdresser tells her the same thing, that Hawa should repaint the mural.
Then Zena came home and she was like, Mom, you should do something about Amadou mural because you are a painter.
But before she makes a decision, Hawa decides there's someone she needs to talk to. Kadiatou Diallo, Amadou's mom.
I told her about it. Then she was like, oh, my dear, you make my day today. She was like, you know, sometimes I go to New York, I get into the taxi, I go over there, I stay in the car and cry. I look at the mirror, I just cry. She told me this.
After that conversation, Hawa decides she'll repaint the mural. Hulbert had told us that his goal with the mural was to humiliate the cops, to not make it about Amadou, but about them. We wanted to know what Hawa thought about that, about Hulbert's mural. So we called her up and asked.
I don't like those kind of actions. Doesn't mean I don't like what he did.
Those kind of actions she's talking about are putting the cops in Ku Klux Klan hoods.
How he want to do it? Is himself, self. Me, what I like in this life is peace.
And so when she begins to work on the mural, she wants to take a different approach. It was important for her to incorporate Amadou's West African heritage into the mural. Who he was, where he came from, what he ate. It's her heritage too. Hawa came to the U.S. from West Africa when she was 25 years old. During one of her calls with Amadou's mom, she asked him what his favorite food was.
She was quiet for a while. Mm-hmm. She was like, oh, I am very happy you asked me this. She said, because you're taking me back so much about how I used to feel Amadou, things that he liked to eat. I said, okay, what is that? She said, lachiri ekosa.
Lachiri kosan is a traditional West African dish. It's often served at weddings and special events.
And so with her conversations with Kadiatou in mind, Hawa and her former art teacher, TJ, start working on the new mural. It was the dead of winter. We asked them why they felt such an urgency to change the mural right then. Couldn't they spare themselves the pain of painting in the freezing cold?
I agreed to do it when she told me the intention.
That's TJ.
It's going to be a regret if we know that this portrait is going to heal the mom and we delay the portrait and anything, God forbid, had happened in between. We would always be guilty in our mind about what happened because it's a weather. It's just the weather. So I thought, well, let's just do it to heal the woman. We're from Africa. We're not used to the cold, but we just had to do it.
Hawa says the people in the community were supportive of them redoing the mural.
I think people were happy that we renew it. People was giving us water and giving us support. They're happy about it.
They spent 2 weeks painting, and on January 28th, 2017, Hawa is ready to reveal the new mural.
It's another cold morning. Hawa is dressed in a bright red coat and black furry boots. A black and white scarf is wrapped around her head. Next to her is Kadiatu. She's wearing all black. And next to her is Ruben Diaz Jr., the former assembly member and now Bronx Borough President.
A lot of people, my community, few people was there. And my daughters were there. And my grandchildren. It was family there too.
That must have been so special.
Yeah, it was.
Together, Hawa and Kadiatu take down the drop cloth that had been covering the new mural. There is no longer the face of a sad boy staring out. Amadou's face is still the centerpiece, but now he's smiling. His face is bright and hopeful. He's slightly aged to match how old he would have been nowadays. There are footsteps behind him, small, baby ones on the Guinean flag, adult ones on the American flag. Then, there's la chirikosan, Amadou's favorite food. His last words to his mom are written on the bottom. Mom, Mom, I'm going to college.
Many people came and many people thanked me before even that day.
The neighborhood seemed to like the new mural, which made Hawa happy. But she really made it with only one person in mind, Kadiatu.
Her happiness was my, you know, the most important part. Because as mom, nobody wants to go through what she goes through. And if I can do something to make her happy, I am happy I did that. And I make the community heal.
Hobart had never seen the new mural that Hawa created. So we showed it to him.
Here is the mural, the second one.
He was quiet for what felt like an eternity.
I like it.
You like it?
I like it. It's, she put her flag in there.
Yeah.
His last words. I like it.
A part of your original mural remains because if you see here, there is a freezer or a fridge, I don't know.
Right.
I was there that they could not paint, and now they took that away. So now there's the tombstone that you represent.
Oh yeah, the tombstone. That's right. I have the tombstone in there. Yeah. You're right. I forgot all about it.
Hawa redid Hulbert's mural, but one piece of his original artwork slipped through the cracks. When Hawa painted the new mural, there was a fridge covering the far right side of the painting. It was recently removed, letting through a part of Hulbert's mural, a tombstone he painted over 23 years ago. It reads, Amadou Diallo, born 1975, died 1999.
Cut the cable. All right, let's go.
It's February 3rd, 2024. Sarah and I are making our way to Soundview. It's been 25 years since Amadou was killed. A crowd has gathered in front of the mural, Hawa's mural. They're holding a candle-lit vigil to remember Amadou. Kadiatou, Amadou's mom, speaks.
So I'm going to take one special person right here standing here. Miss Hawa Diallo. She created the mural in honor of my son. She's an artist who saw the mural.
Kadiatou and Hawa stand side by side in front of the mural. Kadiatou is center stage, facing the crowd. Hawa, she stands more to the side, her eyes fixed on Kadiatou.
She created the mural in honor of my son. She's an artist who saw the mural was growing defaced and really not looking nice. So she worked in winter time to repaint the mural in honor of Amadou, which is here. And don't cry, you make me cry. Please, hang on. It's okay, it's okay.
Hawa is visibly upset, and you can tell how much it means for Kadiatou to have her there.
When we started reporting on this story, we wanted to know why the mural had changed. And the answer seems to have two parts. One is simply because the mural paint was fading. And maybe the anger over Amadou's killing and the police officer's acquittal was fading too. And the second seems to be because the people closest to Amadou wanted the mural to be a reflection of him, not a political statement. And that the time had come for healing.
I call the mural healing. It's for everybody to heal. I know it's not easy, but I do my part. I hope other people will do their part too, to heal both sides.
This has been Shoe Leather, the mural. Shoe Leather is a production of the Columbia Graduate School of Journalism. This episode is reported and written by me, Dani Morera Tretin.
And me, Sarah Braun. Joanne Farian is our executive producer and professor. Rachel Quester and Peter Leonard are our co-professors. Special thanks to Columbia Digital Libraries. Shoe Leather's theme music, Squeegees, is by Ben Lewis, Doran Zunes, and Camille Miller. Remixed by Peter Leonard.
Other music by Blue Dot Sessions. Our season's graphic was created by Indies Holtons with help from Serena Bellati. Thank you for listening.